And we're back for another episode of the Wire Fantasy Football Podcast. This week, we have Tyler and Alex back for the first time in a couple weeks. What's up, boys?
Hey, what's going on?
What's going on, guys? We're going to get together, break down a little bit of some dynasty analysis stuff. We got a little heated debate we got to break down here, too. This will be fun. Let's do it.
Yeah. It's the Wire.
It's the Wire.
D. Griffin. This the Wire, serving up a hot take. Around the league, serving gems like a hot plate. Who's the flex? First pick, rounds 4-8. Trading with the base, that's Superman, we need a cape. This that fantasy, see who get the glory. Who's gonna stay up in their lane talking Tory? Who gonna ride up on the train where the hype at? Yeah, you wanna start them, but matches, you might not like that. Three tutties next week, man, he's double covered. Takes on 100 coming out the oven. Tim and Todd, they the guys, know you gotta love them. Take your pick, do it quick, they on fire. The Wire.
All right, boys. So we're back. It's been a little while. Tim, Alex, I can't wait for this one. I'm just going to sit back, referee this one, but there's a little Brady hater conversation we got going on here.
Alex is a douche.
Feel like two heavyweight boxers about to go at it.
Even though the weight difference is like 120 pounds.
The fans don't need to know that. They all think we're skinny with six packs, Tim. Listen to
our voice. So you're just saying that I'm skinny with a six pack. Yeah. You're 108 pounds.
With a six pack.
Oh, man.
So, all right. So, I'm going to let you lead it in, Alex, because I don't even know where you want to go from here. So just the premise for all the listeners, Alex is a hater. He's been a Dolphins fan that lived in New England for most of his life and then moved down to Florida because he couldn't take it anymore. He wanted his Olympia Sporting Goods to have Dolphins gear and he couldn't take it. So he just moved to Florida. He thinks that Tom Brady is just another Kirk Cousins.
That's not even verbatim, though. That's not what I said. Now you're just putting words in my mouth. I really said he's the GOAT.
Doesn't he pretty do that much all the time? Isn't it great?
I'm gonna stop you there because you're putting words in my mouth now. I said he's the GOAT. It's just everything after that is what pisses you off.
You said he's the luckiest player of all time and all
is
this
he not?
Bullshit that
he can be
Twitter.
The greatest of all time while also be the luckiest player that ever lived.
Okay.
Oh, this is
every single time there's a big moment, right?
Yeah.
Just think about the average football season. There are always kicks that are missed. There are always penalties that are missed. There are always drops. There are always marvelous catches. There are always things that just happen. And you go, oh, man, that's crazy. You know, there's always a game where one team is holding the entire game and the other team finally commits their first penalty and they get called for it, while the team that's holding the entire game doesn't get called for it. There's quarterbacks who go into a playoff game and throw three interceptions against the MVP quarterback that win a game. And that's lucky. That does not happen. It doesn't matter what your name is. It doesn't matter who you are. We can go back 20 years. And again, Tom Brady's the GOAT. But every single year, there's something with Tom Brady. There's the Tuck rule. There's three field goals. There's a top five defense. There's a Julian Edelman catch. There's Russell Wilson throwing the ball instead of rushing it. There's the Falcons throwing the ball instead of running it. There's deflated footballs every single year. And I have to believe that I cannot be the only person in the universe.
You're not. You've been on Twitter before, right? Don't act
like
you're the only
Tom
person
Brady for a long time. Okay. I've been hating Tom Brady before the internet. That's the end of the
before the internet. Before the internet. I'm pretty sure Tom Brady was in that
statement.
He's old, but he's not that old, all right?
I'm not that old either. Come on, man.
I mean, we were the beginning of internet, but go ahead.
He can be the greatest of all time because he puts his team to be in those positions. But, man, when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, the calls go his way. I mean, even Deflategate, they burned the tapes for him or for the Patriots. So it's just everything, one after another, every single year. It just goes his way.
There's no proof of that.
Yeah. Okay. Wink, wink, Tyler. Why don't you
it's
moderate
not about what
something
you know,
else?
It's about what you can prove in court, my friend.
Yeah.
Alex, I'm going to cut you off there. Okay. So
he's going to get
the one that really drove me over the edge with you was when you said he's the luckiest player of all time. All of the big plays have always been in his favor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? That's what you said. He only won one because of the Edelman catch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did he not lose one because of the helmet catch?
Okay.
So that shit happens.
Yeah, he lost one Super Bowl. So one for one. You've crossed him out.
And then what about the Manningham catch? The other Giants one that they lost.
Yeah.
We'll also add that one, right?
I don't remember how good the Manningham catch was.
So this type of stuff happens every single season. So look over the last 10 years, right? 10, 12 years or so. Mahomes only has a ring because Jimmy overthrew Sanders in the Super Bowl, right?
That's not a lot of thing. That's because Jimmy Garoppolo sucks.
But if he hits him on a wide open post down the middle of the field at the 5-yard line with nobody around him, the game's over.
Oh, sure. Right? And if Patrick Mahomes makes every single throw in that game, they win by 40. Next.
But he didn't make every single throw. That's a terrible thing.
Jimmy Garoppolo didn't make the throw. What's your point?
But that's
a luck thing. That's a skill thing.
That's a Hail Mary pass at that point. And
it wasn't a Hail Mary. It was a wide open post down the middle of the field.
And Jimmy Garoppolo sucks. He's not a good quarterback. That's a skill thing, not a luck thing.
Okay,
give me something else.
But 12 months ago, we weren't saying this about Jimmy Garoppolo. We were saying he was an average NFL quarterback, average to above average. Right? He was in this.
That
everybody.
And you were too. Career. That is true.
I guess he was fine. He was fine, but because he's not.
He took an 0-7 team, won 6 games in a row, and then got or 7 games in a row and got
the same
hurt.
Way Tom Brady won 3 Super Bowls on the back of a strong defense. Wow, we're so impressed.
No, it wasn't a strong defense. That was he took over after those big seasons. But let's continue down the line. Let's not just use the one that works in my favor that you're going to try to make an excuse for. Peyton Manning only beat the Carolina Panthers because Cam absolutely fucking choked and didn't show up to the game.
How is that a luck thing? That's you're naming skill things. When I say luck, I'm talking about calls and all these other things. How about, nothing has happened in the past 20 years other than the Saints pass interference thing that's as lucky as a Tuck rule.
The Tuck rule wasn't in the Super Bowl, but
Them to the Super Bowl and they won it.
Okay, and you have the Nicole Roby Coleman Saints game where he leveled the player at the 3-yard line. That would have ended the game.
That's what I was saying. Like, are you talking about the Alvin Kamara thing?
That wasn't Kamara.
It was the Saints game, wasn't it? That's the Saints game.
Oh, did he hit Kamara? I don't remember who he hit.
It might have been Kamara or somebody like that. Yeah, but like that's what I'm talking about.
I think it was Tommy Lee Johnson or whatever the hell his name is. Tommy Lee Lewis, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Look at the kickers that have botched kicks forever. And then all of a sudden, Tom Brady, every single year, gets the one kicker that can kick in 17 feet of snow. Give me a break. Give me a break.
Sounds like better coaching to me, my friend.
But, now we're talking about it, but it was also two different kickers. So, yeah, he had the greatest kicker of all time. And
he
succeeded.
Had like the two clutchest kickers ever.
How many Super Bowls came down to a losing kick? None of them. Has any kicker ever missed a game-winning kick in the Super Bowl? No. Not that I know of.
Missed? There was one.
Who brought his team down? Like in the Rams game against the greatest show on turf, the greatest offense of all time. Everybody, including the greatest football mind in history, John Madden, was saying just take a knee and go to overtime. And in 40 seconds, he marches down the field in 5 plays, and then they're in position to win the game. That type of stuff happens. You're bringing up things like, oh, he only won the Atlanta game because Edelman made a big catch. But you have plays like the Manningham catch. You can make the exact same argument. It was 3rd and 13 when Javon Kearse caught a play that he accidentally kicked the ball to himself against Malcolm Butler to get them on the 2-yard line. We're going to ignore the fact that that was one of the luckiest catches of all time, because if Marshawn Lynch would have gotten the ball and gotten it in, that play is the reason why they won the game, not because Malcolm Butler intercepted the ball on a bad play call. But in reality, that was the right play to make. But it was just they threw it to the wrong guy. And if it was an incomplete pass, you're taking multiple seconds off the clock so that New England doesn't get the ball back.
No, you run the ball. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. We all agree it was a terrible call. But we're going to ignore the fact that Javon Kearse catch was out of this world lucky. Oh, silence. There we go. Yeah. And then rule
change.
Tell me how many rule changes have there been? The catch rule had nothing to do with Tom Brady.
The catch rule.
When they changed the way the catches were called, there was plays like
that was the Calvin Johnson rule. That was the Calvin Johnson rule. I'm not saying that.
Des Bryant. But in games where that type of stuff happens and it has nothing to do with your hate for Tom Brady and your ability to turn everything into a negative thing on
Tom
Brady.
But you're just listing these one-off situations like, yeah, Javon Curse had one catch for Russell Wilson and Mario Manningham had one catch. Eli Manning is the second luckiest player of all time. Fine. The first luckiest player has gotten this all of these things to go right for him every single year. I'm going to tell you a stat. Ready? In games where Brady throws 300 plus yards and three interceptions, which by the way is bad, he is 3-1. In games where Peyton Manning throws for 400 yards and three interceptions, he is 2-5. Okay. Like,
so you're going to bring up you're going to bring up Peyton Manning. So
I'm going to bring up the statistic of that being lucky within itself.
Peyton Manning had a top 10 defense in 10 of his seasons.
How many did Brady have? Let's talk about that really quick. No, he had it in every year but three.
Okay. So
that's a lot of years. That's 15 times.
But so Peyton Manning had 9 1 and duns in the postseason. And the two times that he made it to the Super Bowl, right, in the playoff runs, he only had 5 touchdowns combined and 9 interceptions and won 2 Super Bowls in those 2 runs.
Why are we talking about Peyton Manning? I don't care. I'm just giving you a statistic of 3 interceptions.
I'm giving you a statistic that it happens. Yeah.
You don't throw 3 interceptions and win a game unless you're lucky.
Bob Sanders and Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis, that Peyton Manning doesn't get his first Super Bowl. If New England didn't throw the ball on 4th and 2 inside their own 40-yard line, then Peyton Manning doesn't get his first Super Bowl. And then he goes to New – if you're going to say he goes to Tampa Bay, it's an easy – Peyton Manning went to Denver with the number one ranked defense, and look at that goddamn offense.
Why are we talking about Demaryius
Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, Julius Thomas?
If any quarterback in the playoffs against the MVP, there's 3 interceptions, they lose the game. The only quarterback that doesn't lose the game is Tom Brady.
Aaron Rodgers was not good that game.
He was fine. Truthfully, they should have just went for it at the end of the game. That was the worst call I've ever seen, by the way.
They should have
3 interceptions and win a football game in the playoffs. You just don't. It doesn't happen.
But that's bad coaching. Matt LaFleur had a bad coaching game. Aaron Jones fumbled the ball, right? Aaron Rodgers had what? 2 interceptions, should have been 4.
It should have been like 6 for Brady, first of all. He threw a lot of
Aaron Rodgers
should
have had 4.
I don't think Rodgers had any interceptions, did he?
But remember when Tom Brady threw the ball up to Mike Evans and one of their corners tried catching the ball with his eyes closed and had no idea where he was on the field.
Yeah, he did that stuff happens. That game, it was terrible. Brady made so many bad decisions that game, first of all. And yes, I can, because every single year it's one after another, And look, I hate to break it to you, but somebody has to be the luckiest player in the NFL in NFL history. And Tom Brady's it. Like, every year there's something with him.
But there's...
He can be the greatest of all time. I'm not going to argue that. I'm going to argue with you that, yes, he is inherently the luckiest player of all time because of everything. The rules, the catches, the field goals, the defense.
In order to win an NFL game, you have to be lucky. Every single game, you have to be lucky.
Oh, perfect. Exactly.
You have to be lucky, not perfect.
Exactly.
Because especially in the NFL, Alex. Wait.
Anybody. So, yes, he's lucky. Great.
Especially in the NFL, where you, as a quarterback, you don't play defense, you don't play special teams, you don't catch. In basketball, LeBron James could go down the court and shoot the ball every single time, and it's his skill that defines if they win or lose. Michael Jordan was the same way. In football, it's completely different because Tom Brady is not defending the other players, blocking for his running backs, making the catches, making the calls, play calls, special teams, etc. In order to win any NFL game, you have to be lucky, because no matter how good Tom Brady was or wasn't this week or next week, if the other quarterback just doesn't throw an incomplete pass because he's just fucking on point, there's nothing he could have done as a quarterback to win a game.
I agree.
If Mahomes goes 20 of 22, if Mahomes goes 20 of 22 for 400 yards and four touchdowns, and they don't turn the ball over and they play perfect, there's nothing Tom Brady could have done. But if that defense steps up and stops Mahomes, that's complete. You can't control that as a quarterback. So you can't say somebody's lucky because their defense is good. Half the time their defense is good because he's so efficient on offense. Look at that New England team last year. Last year, New England was a not very good defensive team. But because he was so efficient, look at Jameis. The Bucs are a perfect example. The Bucs didn't have a very good defense last year.
Or offensive line, for the record.
They had a shit ton of talent. And the same thing with an offensive line. But when Brady gets added to that team, now his offensive line is better because Donovan Smith still sucks at left tackle. But because he's identifying the right blitzes, getting the ball out quicker, changing the play at the line, knowing what the defense is running, that shit changes it. And because he's not turning the ball over and giving the Bucs a short field every single time or throwing pick sixes, that means that he is statistically making his defenses better every single year.
I agree with you. You just said the NFL player, NFL quarterbacks, it's luck every time they win a playoff.
Every one of them, though. You can't say he's the luckiest. No, he's just the one that's the best
at. NFL history in the playoffs. Who's got the most of them?
No, what?
Tom Brady. Who's got the most playoff wins in NFL history?
Yeah, Tom. He has.
Tom Brady. So you agree with me that he's the luckiest
player?
He has more in
half of his career than the NFL.
Yeah, you agree with me. He's the luckiest player of all time.
He has four Hall of Fame careers.
You just proved my point. Thank you.
What, that he's won more games?
Yeah, because you just said, if you follow your line of reasoning here, in order to win a playoff game, you have to be lucky. He's won more playoff games than anybody. He's the luckiest.
That makes that makes no sense.
That's what you just said.
Because Brett Favre played for 20 years.
I need a moderator. Tyler, I need a moderator.
Brett Favre played for 20 years. He wasn't just lucky. He also was bad at certain points. Tom Brady's never been
comparing any of them. I'm telling you, Brady's the GOAT.
You're saying
his
longevity is the reason why he's the GOAT.
No, he's winning more playoff games than anybody.
Because he's the best.
Yes, and he's also the luckiest.
No,
yay,
he's not.
We're there. Yes, he is.
Okay, he is. Tyler, take over, please.
Tyler, moderate this.
Tim is mad right now, and this is awesome.
Give us some punch counts. My face here. What do we got? Who's winning? I know, Tim turned red. My
watch is telling me to breathe.
I'm happy as a clam. This is great for me. I love it. Tyler, tell us what's going on.
I feel triggered.
I think there's truth in both sides of the argument. I think he can be, like Alex is saying, he can be the greatest of all time and still be the luckiest of all time. There's no one denying that we haven't had some extremely lucky plays. And Tim's right at the same time, too, that everybody has lucky plays.
Without, in my last point, Big Ben, right? He's a Hall of Fame quarterback. But without the Santonio Holmes tiptoe catch against the Cardinals, Big Ben is in the same conversation as Phillip Rivers.
Glad you could point to Ben's one lucky play over the course of his career. Well, I just named 15 for Tom Brady. Thank you.
Okay, but I also haven't watched every single Steelers game over the course of my career.
Well, there's only one playoff game that you needed to watch in the Super Bowl. There's about 17 you could do with New England.
Oh, I also remember the times where down four or down three with 2 minutes left, him going three and out and the Steelers losing.
What's next, Tyler? What's next from the doc? This is a done conversation. Tim,
yeah,
I think
this
we should
doesn't
wrap
feel like
it up
we're going to solve this
I
one today.
You.
So
I love
let's
you,
talk. Jump into some real NFL news, and let's talk about this big trade that went down this week.
Alex is a douche.
Blockbuster trade looked like something out of a fantasy league. We saw Stafford get traded to the Rams for Goff, and Goff a second and two firsts.
I thought it was two firsts and a third.
I mean, you might be right. Probably a third. But
what's your thoughts, Stylon?
My thoughts? I think that the Lions ass raped the Rams, to be perfectly honest with you. As the Rams, I get what they're going for. Yes, they're shooting for a Super Bowl. I personally aren't sure that bringing Stafford in is really going to be the thing that pushes them over the top where they're going to get there. Yes, Bobby Treats is great. Cup's good. But I don't think that they're dynamic enough on the outside where they're going to be able to make a run at it. Adding Stafford, to me, isn't going to be the solution. And then to give up all those picks and their entire future like that, I don't know. It seems like they're setting themselves up for a really rough next couple of years, especially if Stafford leaves.
Alex, what do you got?
I like the deal for both sides. Stafford, like real life quarterback, I know the fantasy stats don't say it all the time, but Stafford is a much better real life quarterback than Jared Goff. He's multiple levels above Jared Goff. And I like the deal for the Lions, because you knew eventually they were going to move on. So they got a really good haul for him. And for the Rams, I think this makes their whole offense go up another notch or two. Stafford can actually hit a deep ball where Jared Goff can't. This is going to elevate Cam Akers' game, because I believe DeAndre Swift averaged 5 or more receptions or targets per game with Stafford. And, this whole offense takes a huge, huge jump for me. Tim, what do you have?
So I'm on the fence about it. And there's a couple reasons for it. The first is, so I feel that the Rams' perspective is that they could have succeeded with, because of McVay, with a bad quarterback and still been in the same situation they were last year, right? So if John Wolford was their starting quarterback all last year season, their thought process in LA is that McVay is a quarterback whisperer and can elevate the game of his quarterbacks. So they're thinking they're taking Stafford, who's still at the top of his game, and going to extend him and bring him and the rest of their team forward. 2 firsts and a third is a lot for a player and a starting quarterback. I don't think Jared Goff is as good as he has been. I think McVay did make a huge difference. My concern is, I don't think it's a good fit for Stafford. Now, Stafford's fantasy production has been through the roof, right? He's been also always down 14 his entire NFL career in every single game by the end of the first quarter. And he's always playing from behind. So, yeah, Stafford's been a fantasy goldmine for the last 10 years, because being down 14 and throwing the ball is going to make a player a little bit more fantasy production. But he's used to, big-bodied, deep-throwed wide receivers, and now he has a lot more dink and dunk and breaking the defense down with guys like Kupp and Woods. And I don't think, it's just not what I'm used to seeing with Stafford. And I don't know if the scheme is going to fit his game as a gunslinger.
Yeah, I agree with that idea too. And the fact that I don't really know if it's really that big of a step up, because we know that Stafford has this incredible arm and he throws ball all over the place. But when you start looking at the actual metrics of it, you look at the attempts and the completions and the yards that they're throwing year in and year out, him and Goff are pretty much the same thing. And Goff has always been throwing a lot less explosive passes, whereas Stafford's always trying to go over the top. You get these kind of plays. So to me, it's almost like one of those things where I feel like they traded apples for apples, and there'll probably be a slight increase, but I don't think it's enough where it's going to make that huge of a difference.
I feel like that says something about Stafford, though. If you're saying that Goff and Stafford were similar in numbers, but their coaching staffs were very different, vastly different. I mean, the Lions probably have one of the worst coaching staffs in the league. Then, what does that mean Stafford did? Stafford, truthfully, I just think from a talent perspective, he's far and above whatever Goff can be. It is a lot for Stafford, and I can see like the face value of that. But at the same time, Stafford's never had a good team around him in total. He's only had Calvin Johnson and, anybody else that's around. So
Kenny Galladay, Marvin Jones. He's had
he's had good wide receivers around him. Of course, most NFL quarterbacks do. Most successful NFL quarterbacks do. I'm saying he's never had a defense. He's never had a run game. When was the last time the Lions had a 1,000-yard rusher?
But that points to the Lions fit as a whole. So, and I love the deal for Stafford, and I actually really like it for Goff as players, because Stafford was in Detroit. Kenny Galladay and Marvin Jones are both free agents. I see Marvin Jones leaving and going to New England this year. And Kenny Galladay is going to be tricky. Where does he go? Right. And there's not much more wide receiver talent there. I like it for Goff, because they can now bring in their quarterback with their cap space that they have and build the team around what fits him. Because right now what's there has fit Stafford.
Do you think Goff stays and is the solution, though?
I think Goff's their starting quarterback for the next year or two, yes.
Do you build a team around Goff for the next year or two? Or do
Well, building the team around Goff is the same thing about than building a team around a rookie quarterback. You know, and he fits the average mold of a quarterback. He has a decent arm. He can read defense all right. You know, he's not terribly unathletic. You know, he gets the ball out quick when he needs to. He typically doesn't make bad reads. There's not a lot of fixing to him. He just doesn't have the high ceiling that they were. He's an average NFL quarterback when it comes down to it.
Yeah, I think what gets lost in this trade is, where do you value T.J. Hockenson and
more.
Maybe some of the other? Yeah, where do you value the Detroit or Rams? You know, options. Is there anybody that sticks out to you as a clear winner or a clear loser?
I think the clear loser is going to be Swift, to be honest with you, because Stafford's never really been that running back target guy. Goff has never been that running back target guy as much as Stafford has been. Goff has typically always used his tight ends in Everett and Higbee over the last couple of seasons who have been very good, right?
So I kind of disagree with that because we saw a lot of seasons, well, I shouldn't say a lot of seasons, but we've seen seasons now when Gurley was there and he was catching a ton of balls. But I think that's more of a scheme thing that we haven't seen Goff throw into the running back in the last year or so because Gurley fell off so quickly. And then last year we didn't really know who was there and it was a carousel.
But last year as a good point. Akers was never targeted. Henderson was never really targeted.
That's
Brown
not true.
Was never really
they all average. If you would have combined all their targets Swift. Together. Yeah, but if you would have combined all their targets together, there was probably 6 targets a game to the running back and probably 4 catches in that range.
And Swift is getting 5 catches a game.
Swift is a much more dynamic pass catcher than any of those guys were. So for him to get more usage doesn't surprise. We're talking about two more passes a game probably. And that's something that they would scheme up.
I think it's more the team scheme. Almost going to remain the same where Goff is now going to go in and it's going to be a lot more Hockenson and in the middle of the, it's a lot. Everything's in the middle of the field for Goff.
Yeah, but you know, I don't think that
has been over his career.
I don't think that's a Goff thing. I think that's a coaching scheme. I think that's McVay's offense.
I think it's because of Goff's inability and he doesn't have the greatest arm. Stafford can, from one side of the field, throw a dart to the other sideline and not have to worry about it, right? He's Brett Favre. He has same skill set.
There's no argument.
That's kind of the point I'm making on him.
I guess it's tough to say because we haven't seen McVay with anybody but Goff. But I don't know. And that to me feels more like that's Goff. McVay's offense. He wants to run the ball. He wants to play action, throw in immediate routes, all that nonsense.
Yeah.
And then throws the deep ball when he has to.
Goff has been a game manager.
Right. I think you both are kind of valid with your takes. I mean, I think from an efficiency standpoint, you're not going to see Swift do the same because the offense isn't going to be nearly as good with Goff and no wide receivers. And, they'll have free agency and stuff, but I do think that Swift will get targeted more because of the coaching staff they're bringing in. They're bringing in Dan Campbell and a few, I forget who the coordinator is, but they already said they kind of want to make DeAndre Swift the next Austin Eckler, which is obviously really good news. But I think Swift will be overdrafted because the volume will be there, but the efficiency and the production is going to kind of lack, especially for where he's going to get drafted, especially in redraft. And he's not somebody I want in Dynasty because everybody wants the world for him right now. And truthfully, I'd rather pay that same price for Cam Akers, who actually gets a bump in the offense. He's going to have more touchdown opportunity. Stafford's going to throw him the ball. And I think Cam Akers is super talented. I think Swift is more talented, but I think that Cam Akers is in the better situation.
Right. And that's been the thing with Akers versus Swift since the NFL draft, not even when you draft the players. Akers is going to be the guy who gets a lot more volume and in a better situation, but Swift is the premier talent.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good segue into our next segment. What do you boys think?
Yeah. So with this segment, we're trying to gear the segment towards showing you the reasons for certain fantasy outlooks. It's more than just where they were drafted, right? So Tyler, if you want to take the lead on this one.
So So the idea behind this is that when you're analyzing these incoming rookies, it's one of those things where people will look at these premier talents like we saw last year, and like Alex is saying with Swift. Coming up before the draft, everyone was looking at Swift as he was going to be the best back in this class. Now, based off of fit, he didn't end up being that guy. It ended up being more Taylor. We saw CEH have it and a little bit of a spurt there at the beginning of the season because of his fit. We saw some things with Gibson come on, and he was hot. And obviously, Swift took a backseat to these guys. And with that, it obviously became a little bit because of the fit, a little bit because of the coaching. Obviously, Swift was banged up. But every year we have players like this that they end up in new situations, or when they get drafted, they fall into these places. And you're going to have to kind of, I don't want to say hinder your projections on them, but you kind of have to take that into account as you're analyzing these players. Like, where do they actually end up, and how is that situation going to affect them?
Right. And in my opinion, there's five ways to value a player and use to kind of see where they're going to be this season and going forward, right? So the first one is coaching, right? Second one is team scheme, the player's fit, their role, and the team outlook. So kind of to break it down really quick, team outlook's easy. So Matt Stafford, as we just used, has been losing pretty much his entire career. Now, a player who goes to a losing team like a Terry McLaurin, who's in Washington and they're always losing, is going to get that they're typically going to throw the ball more. So a power back, a guy like an AJ Dillon, if he goes to Washington, isn't as loved as if he goes to a team like Green Bay, who's going to be up typically in most games once he gets a featured role, and he's going to be, you know, killing the clock, moving the chains, you know, winning football plays. Their role is also important because you have a player like they get drafted. Like, let's say Jalen Waddle goes to New England. Now he's obviously the most talented player on the team. Is his role going to be on the field every single play, like a guy like a Calvin Ridley in Atlanta?
Yeah, I think another good example of that would be Robbie Anderson, right? Like, kind of you're talking about earlier, he's kind of another guy that kind of fits into that new role and how they fit. Yeah, Waddle, I think Anderson's another good one too.
Yeah, and then you have team scheme. So, you know, we just discussed a little bit with Stafford versus Goff, and they're on the two offenses they're on. So when you have a guy like Stafford who can make any throw typically over the course of their career, it's a lot of deep balls, you know, behind the linebackers. It's not a lot of dink and dunk down the field game management stuff the way that Goff has been in the last couple of years. So, you know, it's going to be very weird to try to project Woods and Kupp with a quarterback who typically doesn't fit that dink dunk, move the chains type offense that they have.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of where I was going with that whole thing before when we were having that discussion about Stafford, is that the options around him just don't fit. And like you're saying, that's going to hinder his production down the line, I think. And we're going to see that. And Tim, you keep using Allen Robinson as an example, is that we saw him come from Jacksonville, and he was good there, but he wasn't great. And now comes to Chicago, and he looks like a whole new player.
And yeah, exactly. And he's a good person to use that we've been trying to use off air in our discussions. And he's a free agent. So, and he's definitely not going back to Chicago. So, you know, taking him and his landing spot is going to determine where I want to draft him and where I value him. Now, I know I'm an Allen Robinson truther, just like anybody else is, right? But, you know, if he goes to Cleveland and he's on the other side of Jarvis Landry, the two tight ends, the running game, you know, it's going to be a lot different than in Chicago. And in Miami's the same way. I'm still not 100% sold on Tua. You know, they have Devontae Parker, they have Gesicki, et cetera. If he goes somewhere like if Watson gets traded to the Jets and he signs there, now we're talking something completely different than if he just signs in Miami and is battling for targets with Parker and Preston Williams, et cetera.
Sure. And I think, again, now we're going to, if we're going to talk about Watson, that's a good segue into the other one that Alex kind of pointed out earlier, is that coaching scheme is a huge deal. And we saw that with Watson early in the year. In the first four games, he was absolutely horrible. And then when the coaching got fired, they brought in a new coach, all of a sudden he looked like Watson of old.
Yeah, with the Watson situation, primarily, it took away Hopkins, and because they didn't even try to replace him, really. They said, work with what you got. And then, like you said, the first four games, I think, was an adjustment period in that scheme. And then they said, okay, Bill O'Brien, this isn't for you. And then Watson, right after that, something clicked for him. And you know, I don't know if it was vengeance or if it was, you know, something with the scheme, but he looked like a completely different player. They sort of handed the offense over to him and said, hey, Watson, do what you need to do to win games. And he fell short more often than not. But, you know, there's a lot more to it than just quarterback play, obviously, in Houston. And he looked, this was probably his best season that he's had under center with Houston. And he didn't have Will Fuller for a good portion of the games. He didn't have Hopkins at all. The run game was, it was okay. It wasn't anything special. And, you know, I think handing him the keys and switching the offense from whatever Bill O'Brien was calling to whatever, and you know, whatever the new coach was calling was a really big help for him. And that's kind of where we can see scheme coaching staff come in for quarterbacks primarily, help them or even hurt them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we were trying to tie this into the rookie draft. So, you know, take some of these top end rookies that you're going to be drafting in your certain dynasty leagues or even in your redraft leagues. And, you know, we have the top, you know, wideouts, guys like, you know, Smith and Waddle and Chase. Let's take Chase, for instance. Let's just say he's going to be the first wide receiver off the board. So he could go anywhere from, you know, two or three all the way down to 10 or 12. I don't think there's any way that he slips all the way to 12, but let's just use the 49ers, for instance. They have Debo, they have Ayuk, they have Kittle. And it's going to be hard for him to battle for targets as much as if he goes to a Philadelphia, right? So if you would have switched CeeDee Lamb and Rieger, okay, that's probably a bad one because CeeDee Lamb is 10 times the player Rieger is. But last year when they in the draft, when Minnesota was, everybody has seen the video of the Vikings draft room when the Eagles decided to take Rieger, they weren't even going to draft the wide receiver. And then we're like, wait a second, Justin Jefferson's there? They were going to, I think they said they were going to go corner and then go wide receiver with their second pick. So maybe they were targeting, you know, a Rieger or somebody else in the latter half, maybe a T. Higgins or something with their late 20 pick. But when Jefferson was there, they're like, nope, we have to take him. And we all saw from day one that he was going to fit.
Yeah, and I think, you know, something that can't get lost in all of this is obviously the talent piece, right? Like, if Justin Jefferson was an average talent, you know, the Vikings wouldn't have taken him and he wouldn't have completely balled out. And I still think, you know, if a guy like Justin Jefferson went to the Eagles, he would have had a fine season. I think he would have had a very nice season. Would he have had Vikings Justin Jefferson season? Absolutely not. And that's kind of what we're talking about. That's how you elevate. You know, that's how you elevate your analysis, is you really start to look at what is the coaching staff doing for the team? Who are the coaches they brought in? What's the scheme they're in? You know, who are the players around that player?
And I think and a good
kind of where it ties in.
A good fix to what I said, instead of using a guy like Rieger, the perfect one is CeeDee Lamb versus Justin Jefferson. CeeDee Lamb goes to an offense where you have Cooper, where you have Gallup, and then Jefferson just goes somewhere where all they have is Adam Thielen, and he's just thrown into the Diggs role.
Yeah, I guess that's a fair point in that sense. And I guess that goes both ways, because in that sense, we saw what Lamb could be at the beginning of the year, and so you saw his talent show out, like Alex is saying.
Yeah, there was no way to predict that, though, because that was the most efficient offense we've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was the knock that everybody was kind of nervous on him, was that there were so many options there that he wasn't going to have that production. Because I know we had that conversation that we thought Jefferson was going to be really productive coming in. I was higher on Rieger than you were, but obviously that didn't pan out. And I think that's to be seen still, but it's one of those things. Like this year, we saw that with Pittman. I think Pittman's going to be a great guy this year. That's going to come out of and blow people out of the water. Where?
Wait! No! Zach, if you're listening, turn off the podcast. I'm trying to trade for him.
Yeah, so am I. Don't worry about it. We've been bidding against each other for the last 2 weeks. I know.
I mean, you know they don't have a quarterback, right?
I don't care.
Okay, but we're talking about situation, and
I'm trying to use that to my advantage.
It's a little weird right now. I'm just going to say it.
Jacob Eason is going to love Michael Pittman.
Well, I don't think it's going to be Eason. I think they're going to bring in a vet. But
it's not. No way.
I think Pittman's going to end up being the guy there, but that's just me. But again, last year, the fit, it was still a little bit of TY. We knew Rivers liked the tight ends a lot. Now this new fit, I think he's going to end up being a focus. And that'll change a lot of his value, right?
Yeah, I agree. You know, with some of those talented guys like Pittman, I mean, personally, I love Pittman as well. If he's going to trade him, I'll take him too.
He's not.
Yeah, I know. There's actually one really good example of where fit and scheme have mattered prominently in a rookie draft, especially in your dynasty leagues. If you look at Jonathan Taylor versus Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if we look at talent, probably was right there with Cam Akers. And, you know, that was my take, is I liked Clyde Edwards-Helaire, of course, but the situation he fell into was perfect. It's a goldmine for running back.
I see what you're saying. I mean, I wasn't as high on Edwards-Helaire as I was Taylor and Swift.
Yeah. And I think like in all of this, right, it depends on your team fit and everything. You know, sometimes taking the most talented guy works out, but in other cases, you take the most talented guy that falls into the worst situation possible, and it's not going to work out. I mean, we've seen that so many times over the years. Kerryon Johnson coming out was a really good running back. You know, and I think scheme really hurt him with the Lions. I don't think they ever were able to. They tried to get him the touches, but it looked like they didn't know how to. You know, so I think that in terms of like Helaire, he ended up being the number one pick in rookie drafts, and then Taylor ended up being number two, which was, you know, he's still pretty high. But I think if Helaire went to anywhere else but the Chiefs, you're looking at Taylor as the number one pick in every single rookie draft.
That's probably fair. And obviously you're talking about non-Superflex 1QB leagues. I think that one's a little more of a personal opinion, because I think going in, everybody was looking at Indy's line and thinking that Taylor was going to be an absolute monster.
Yeah, so it just took him a little bit to get going.
Right. But I don't know. But I guess to get back to the point is that when you're looking at these guys, it's one of those things that you got to take the whole picture in, because when you just look at the talent alone, odds are you're going to get burned. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. What do you mean?
I mean that. So last year, everyone said this is a record-breaking rookie class. All the wide receivers are coming in. They all should hit. They all should be great. And a lot of them did hit. But coming in, so last year we had the top three for the wide receivers. We had Ruggs. We had Judy and Lamb. Those were the three that everyone was talking about. You look at it now, Judy ended up in Denver, and he's not even in the conversation for being one of these top rookie wide receivers right now. Not even close. Ruggs isn't even in a conversation. I bet there'll be people that have cut Ruggs this year.
In a redraft league. Whoa. In a redraft league.
Yeah, you don't cut Ruggs in Dynasty.
I agree, but there will be people that do it. I guarantee it. If he keeps on this track that he's
I hope
on.
They're in my league. That's all
yeah,
I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with you, but it will be people that do it. And again, like you're saying, these guys were looked at as the top prospects coming out. And people took Ruggs early, thinking he was going to be the number one in Oakland and he was going to fill Cooper's role and all blah, 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 blah. And he's just not that guy. Not using him like that.
I think Jerry Jeudy's the perfect guy for what you're talking about, honestly. I still think Jerry Jeudy's one of the top talents in this draft, genuinely. Like, I think he's up there with the other guys from a talent perspective. But he got stuck with Drew Lock. He got stuck with a crowded offense with a bunch of pass catchers. I know Courtland Sutton didn't play really, but he got stuck in a kind of a bad offense with a bad quarterback and a lot of different mouths to feed. And I still think Jerry Jeudy is an immense talent and somebody that I would be looking to trade for. But is that going to burn me at the end of the day because I'm paying up for Jerry Jeudy when it may just not work out for him in Denver?
And even if, it's not that it didn't work out. His ceiling is just so low just because of his fit.
Well, his ceiling is still high, but because if you're talking long term, Jeudy could turn into an absolute stud, right?
Yeah.
If Sutton just doesn't work out, if his injuries continue to pile up, or if they move on from him, or if they get get somebody better than Drew Lock, you know, a guy. Right,
there's tons of ifs that can play out. Jeudy could very well
turn into Corey Davis, where all of a sudden, year two, year three. Now all of a sudden he's good again, right? Because Corey Davis was somebody who you drafted probably at the 103 in a super flex league. He got drafted by a team with a young quarterback that was typically playing from behind, that had absolutely no wide receivers. He was drafted at like a top five pick, I believe. And all of a sudden it took this year with a quarterback change, a coaching change, and a scheme change for it to actually fit his and AJ Brown coming in for it to actually work in his favor. He's not a team's number one wide receiver, but he's a good wide receiver. But 10, 12 months ago, people were arguing that, you know, is Corey Davis even a starting wide receiver in the NFL?
Future XFL superstar Corey Davis.
Yes, exactly. You know, and sometimes with these players, you know, it happens at every single position. If you draft a linebacker, a 3-4 outside linebacker, right? Let me get off fantasy talk for a second and just
Deion Jordan is the example.
Deion Jordan, he's a 3, you know, what is he, a 4-3 D end? And then all of a sudden he got drafted by a team who's a 3-4 outside linebacker and has to drop in coverage and worry about this instead of just putting his hand in the dirt and pass rushing. A guy like Trey Flowers, if he got drafted on a team and he had to play more outside linebacker, he may not have had the same production as he's had, where he's now played for two teams where it's just, hey, put your hand down, go get the quarterback.
Sure. And I feel like I'm a broken record at this point, but it really just comes down to these guys that can be immensely talented, but if it does not fit and they do not have the right system around them, it's just not going to work. Just not. You can't force that.
Are there any fits that you guys see for the upcoming NFL draft that really stand out to you?
Najee Harris to Miami.
No, please don't wish that on
us. In their first second round pick. I mean, you're talking about you have what? 3, 18, and 36. If you've already addressed two needs, addressing a power back to pair with Gaskins is going to be something you guys could use, especially with your defense.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't love the talent of Harris. I don't particularly love the talent. I don't see it with him. I know a lot of people do. I'd rather just have Gaskins and kind of rotate running backs and kind of go from there. I do see the fit though, right? Like they're going to run they have to run the ball more. They have to win games. They have to, you know.
Yeah, they have to get the ball.
The way you do that with Tua right now is you run the ball. So yeah, I don't hate the fit. Are there any other players that really stand out to you?
That's tough. I was actually looking at Waddle or Smith in Miami. It seems like everybody's looking at Miami, obviously.
Bring it on.
We had a conversation the other day with Kyle, and I thought that was an interesting one, that he was talking about ETN to San Francisco, and I think that might actually be a really good fit there. I agree with him there. But outside that, I'm still doing my homework on these guys. My opinion is going to change 100 times, but
yeah, you caught me off guard on this one.
Oh, sorry. I thought I could kind of, if each of us give a player, Kyle Pitts to the Bengals would be really fun, right? Like, what? No
they
way.
Have so I many options Kyle. There already.
Oh, that's exactly right. Joe Burrow is just, his outlook is going to be incredible. I think that, like, because AJ Green's gone.
No, for the player himself, for Pitts, it hurts him.
I don't think it hurts him. I think he's actually helped in that offense. I mean, if you look at who's drafting around there, I mean, Miami takes him at 3 with Tua. Matt Ryan in Atlanta, okay, but they have Hurts.
You're talking about Pitts?
Yeah, he's going to be a top 10 pick, I think. The Eagles take him at six behind what now he's playing with Ertz
and the Goddard.
Okay. Ertz so the Lions take him at seven, you got Hockenson. I mean, the Panthers could take him at eight, but then they have Teddy Bridgewater.
I just don't know Hunter Henry's contract situation, but I'd be interested.
Hunter Henry is a free agent.
Okay, yeah, so there we go. I thought so. You know, 13 to the Chargers, Kyle Pitts goes there. I'd love it. I mean,
yeah, that'd be a good fit.
Because he fits what Henry has been doing for them for quite a long time, is a good athlete. You know, he fits the mold of a Hunter Henry, to be honest with you.
He's way more athletic than
Hunter Henry. Hunter Henry is more like Austin Hooper to me.
Pitts, have you watched any of Pitts' films? Because every time I watch him, he doesn't look like a tight end at all. He's not built like a tight end. He doesn't run like a tight end. He's a wide receiver lined up as a tight end.
So yeah, he's Evan Engram.
He's fat. He's way more. Yeah, he's much better. Faster and way more dynamic than Evan Engram.
Evan Engram is an unreal athlete,
and he's better. True.
Yeah, but Evan Engram, I think we're thinking of it. You know, plate in his foot, Evan Engram. We're not thinking about, you know, rookie season, Evan Engram.
Yes, that's fair, but I think he's going to be something special if he ends up in the right spot. I do like the Chargers fit for him.
Chargers would be fun.
I see him. There's a couple teams in the early teens. I don't see him getting past the Vikings at 14.
They have drafted Irv Smith.
Irv Smith is a good tight end.
Yeah, but you can't pass him up if he's gotten that far.
No, they need Irv defensive Smith is help.
Good, and yeah, they need a lot more help than offense. I mean, if just, you know,
Arizona would be an interesting fit too.
My Kirk Cousins dynasty trade would love it. But what about the Cardinals?
That's what I just said. Arizona would be an interesting fit.
Oh yeah,
yeah. He's not going to sleep. There's no way Pitts goes 16.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you look at the top 12 here, they all have.
Does Dallas just say screw it, sign Dak, and then draft Pitts?
No, they just signed.
All right, that wouldn't even be good for Pitts then.
No, I know it wouldn't, but I'm just looking at potential fits. Denver's not going to draft them. They have
I think the Chargers are the best fit here.
And I think in the top 10, I think the Bengals are the top fit, but once you start getting teens, yeah, you get the Chargers.
Carolina?
Bengals cannot take – I'm sorry, but the Bengals cannot take
– Would you rather have a crowded offense with Teddy Bridgewater or a crowded offense with Joe Burrow?
Yeah, but it's only crowded because they only use their wide receivers. Samuel is a free agent. They don't have a tight end that they typically target. I mean, he's not going to have as many targets because of McCaffrey, but
yeah, but Curtis Samuel only had those targets because of McCaffrey and him being out. So
did Robbie Anderson.
McCaffrey's going to come back and get his. So I don't. I do see it's a good fit, though. I see what you're saying. It's just Teddy Bridgewater's so bad.
So I'm going to kill both of those spots for you. They just signed Ian Thomas to a long-term deal last year. The Bengals have absolutely no choice but to draft an offensive lineman.
Or defense.
Yeah, no, they definitely have to protect Burrow. I'm just saying.
There's no way.
They have to draft, I agree. They have to draft line, but how fun would it be for Kyle Pitts and Cincy? I think it'd be great.
It would be more negative for them than anything, in my opinion, because they're so bad everywhere else that just adding another weapon doesn't help.
No, they need to do some protection. There's no way. To me, I agree with Tim. It's the Chargers. Chargers make the most sense. They need to put some they've got a decent line. They need to put some options around Herbert.
I see that, you know, potentially the Chargers trading up for him.
Yeah.
They don't have as many holes. The Chargers are either going to go defense or Pitts. You know what I mean? Their offensive line is improving a little bit. They have their running back situation covered. Wide receivers, for the most part, covered. You know, Pitts, offensive line, or defense is the only really thing they need.
If Pitts falls to New England, are you guys going to cry?
I don't want
to. I mean, I'll take any talented offensive player at this point. But
seriously, it's been so long since you've had one.
Yeah. Hey, leave Jacoby Myers alone.
Okay, sorry. You can trade him for Scotty Miller over there.
Don't tempt me with a good time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I haven't really gone through – it's a little too early for me to start doing mock drafts and trying to figure out where players are going to slide. But, you know, it's going to
– just a preliminary thought.
Yeah, it's a preliminary. I really like Harris at the 36 spot to Miami. Maybe Miami trades up with their 36 pick and moves up to, you know, the late 20s, like 29, 30, maybe, so they can get that extra year option on a running back and then let them walk in free agency kind of thing. But, you know, they need a power back.
What about ETN to the Bills? Send them, not ETN, I'm sorry. What about Harris to the Bills? Send them to the Bills. I don't want him in Miami.
They've got too much draft capital and Moss and Singletary for them to go get another guy.
I see the Saints trading back because they just, it's another way to cut a little cap.
Seriously, they need to.
They're in such a bad spot. You know, maybe Miami moves up from 36 to 28 and gives up a fourth round pick or something to do it. And now you have a fifth year option on a running back.
Yeah, I could be totally wrong about Harris. I don't think I've done my research enough to know whether I want him.
So. Yeah, you typically go, I don't like him. I don't want him. Sucks. And, you know, I do the same thing.
I just don't see him. Look, the film I've seen, he's not impressive to me. That's it.
Yeah, and that's I've done the same thing last year. I did it on Rieger, and I'm going to do it until the day I die. I don't believe in his talent. I mean, day's fast, but. Everybody at that level's fast. I mean, I don't see him ever being more than a wide receiver 4 or 5.
Yep. I don't even disagree at this point. It's so hard to tell with that offense and that coaching staff and everything else.
And when I say wide receiver 4 or 5, I mean like fantasy wise.
Yeah.
As a team starting wide receiver, he's not it. He's your third wide receiver.
Yep. Tend to agree.
But yeah. So I think that's all we have, unless you guys have any last minute stances on this. It's going to be
I think it's a good it's a good thing to at least think about this early in the offseason, right? Because there's going to be a lot of movement. There's going to be a lot of, you know, quarterbacks traded or wide receivers on the move or whatever else, so you kind of have to constantly be on how does this move affect my team. And, you know, it could even be something as simple as an offensive lineman being traded. You know, that stuff matters, because if your quarterback loses an offensive lineman, does that mean he has to hit somebody quicker? You know, does that offense bring Curtis Samuel? And kind of the snowball effect of you know, what happens with these different personnel moves, and kind of getting to that next level as a fantasy player is learning not only to look at the talent and, you know, realizing that there's a situation with the talent that needs to be looked at.
And it's a good one to use is Chubb, right? And Baker, you know, when they signed Conklin, they drafted, his name's slipping my mind right now, the other kid, the left tackle, but they had a good interior guard, two guards and a center, and then they added two very good offensive tackles.
Yeah.
And now they have a five stud man offensive line, and they're moving people, and Baker has a lot more time. Chubb is a lot more dynamic. Hunt, same thing. You know, last year they were the most inefficient offense running the ball inside the 20 we've ever seen. And this year, I mean, every single time they were inside the 20, they handed the ball off and it felt like it was just a touchdown.
Yeah, definitely. I 100% agree. Even defenses, right? Like, a defense gets worse, that's, you know, only better for your quarterback, right? In fantasy. So, you know, there's a lot of different aspects to look at. It's not just looking at your team and saying, I like this player because they're talented. No, what's going on around them? What's, you know, where are they drafted to and everything else. So yeah, I think the five tips that you gave earlier are exactly what you should be considering, especially heading into a busy offseason.
I love it. I couldn't have said it any better, boys.
And everybody listening, you know where to come to get our input on it. We'll be breaking it down when there's some big plays and a big player movement and things like that. You know, it may not, you may not as a fantasy owner care about where Jack Conklin got signed last year as a free agent, because he's a right tackle and you're not drafting him. But, you know, if another big offensive lineman goes somewhere else and they make a big, you know, if a Rodney Hudson moves on from Vegas and they go somewhere else and shore up an offensive line, that could be huge for a running back or a quarterback, you know, and it's a lot more than just what wide receivers are around a quarterback.
Before we go, Tim, Brady, the luckiest quarterback alive?
No. What's I want to know before we hop off. I don't want to go. You're going to trigger me again. I'm not going to do it. We never got your prediction for the Super Bowl.
I am wavering I want Mahomes to win, but I just think Brady gets lucky one more time to end his career.
Score.
Let's go 34-31.
Wow. I'm betting the under, and I'm betting the Bucks. I'm going – wait, Mike, I know I'm betting the under. I'm going 24-17.
I said about the same thing, but I took it to Kansas City.
Yeah.
But
all right.
That's all we got, boys.
That's it. We'll catch you guys after the Super Bowl. Go Brady. Alex, you're a douche.
Hey, I just said the Bucks are going to win, man. Greatest of all time. Luckiest win coming up.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See ya.
All right, boys. Peace.